Well, good evening and a very warm welcome one and all to Dr. Rock's radio show on tnsradio.com and scottishsovereignsontheland.ning.com. This week we've got a show, hopefully with a pair of live guests on the Skype speaking with me. Really in the last, year and a half, 2 years, certainly since Birkenhead, I've been moving around the place, meeting an unbelievable number of people really one way or the other, and for every person that I've met there's been a different approach to the administration that we find ourselves one way or the other serving. And some of these approaches look stronger than others, but it seems to me that all of them are used one way or the other as a beginning on the path of realization or learning, and that even those that don't look very successful to start with, just as failed hypotheses so often do, they yield a lot more information. I have a tendency myself to move towards the resolutions that look like they're going to involve community and group action, because it seems that when we're out there on our own, the hits are a lot bigger and a lot more frequent, as it were. Although, of course, whenever there are successes, there are so much more entertaining to watch. But there's also many people out there who've got their own very, very markedly individual approach, and they're doing their work on their own behalf, but each bit that they put out also helps the rest of us to see what's being tried and how it works out really on the ground. And on tonight's show, the first half of the show, hopefully I'll be speaking with the first guest about 25 past six. We're going to have Michael of the Albiones, or Michael of Elmet as he used to be known, will be known to many of you. And he's one of an increasingly large group of extremely dedicated people who are bringing about the manifestation of the Universal Community Trust, which has been an idea for many years now and has been growing, but is now actually manifesting itself into all sorts of chat boxes and onto the ground and in all manner of ways. So we'll be talking a little bit about the Universal Community Trust. But before that, we'll be having a chat about representative action, void and illegal mortgages, and arbitration. This is a case that's been going on for some time, and I think many conclusions have been reached, the latest one only in fairly recent days. So I'll be speaking with Michael from about 20 past six to about halfway through the show, hopefully. And then later on, if all goes according to plan, I'll be able to catch up with commonly known as Dom. I've seen him only a couple of times this year, saw him a lot more often last year, but I know, as usual, he's been out there posting things on YouTube and asking people questions. So we'll have a bit of the collective approach in the first half of the show, a bit more of the individual approach in the second half. And whilst I go and find where Michael is, I'll play another couple of tunes. Thanks, as ever, to all of you for being out there. It's really great to be on, see so many people in the chat boxes. And thanks also to the Welfare for, once again, a very entertaining and informative show. In the meantime, a couple of tunes, and I'll be back with you shortly. You're listening to Dr. Rock's radio show, and this is Dr. Rock here, and I've got with me as my first guest this evening, Michael of the Albiones. Are you there, Michael?
Yeah, good evening, Nick. Ben. Oh, Ben Ira.
Thank you very much. Yes, indeed. Yeah, in the process of that. Been Ben for a while here, but you've got many projects, I know, that you do. We've spoken about some of them before, but we're hoping tonight to speak a little bit later about the UCT. But first of all, I'm interested in chatting about this representative action that you've got on, that you're helping to run on mortgages. How did that come about? How did you get involved in a project like that?
Well, the project, it was never a project, it just kind of evolved as events have unfolded with regard to our understanding, our knowledge. Can you hear me all right?
I can hear you. I can hear something in the background as well.
It should be quiet now. It's just someone passing through.
Yeah, I think it's gone now. That's great. Yeah, do carry on. Sorry to interrupt.
It may seem to people who are looking at it that it's a project, but it never really kind of began as a project. It's more of an unfoldment, in that what began as me simply asking questions about a mortgage 3 years ago has now become something that has occupied all of the courts, from the county courts right through to the courts of appeal, the administrative court, all the way to the Supreme Court, with people going in and contesting the validity of their mortgages on the very simple grounds that there is no lawful contract in place between the mortgagor and the bank. Now, can you hear me okay?
Yeah, I can hear you. Was that your mortgage that you queried to start all of this? Was it a sort of personal dip into the pool?
Yeah, that's correct.
Yeah.
So it's mushroomed, and I suppose it has become a representative action, and we've got quite a number of people joining in now. And whilst at the same time, it's kind of always been going on just in the background. It's never been particularly mainstreamed. The media have never picked up on it. But nevertheless, there are now significant numbers going into the courts and arguing, using statutory law as well as the law of contracts, that there is no valid and enforceable agreement in place between the parties. This is on account of the fact that the banks never sign anything. The 1828 Statute of Frauds Amendment Act basically states you can't sue a bank if you don't have anything that he has signed. So it would seem that they're relying on that to get out of their obligations. But there are all kinds of tricks going on at the same time with the mortgage game. There's the securitisation of the mortgages. There's the bundling of them up into securities, which they sell off in packages. But I'm not going to go into that this evening, because I really want to go into it in terms of what is actually going on here in terms of the courts, Her Majesty's courts, and other means by which the people, because it has now escalated to a level where we are now looking at an action that is the people versus the banks.
And has that come about just as people sort of becoming interested in what you're doing and adding their names to the list, as it were, or is everybody acting independently?
A combination. People are working independently and collaboratively, and that is a very effective means by which to take on the banks, I think. Because, you know, what we're dealing with here is criminality, and the issue of the LIBOR or LIBOR scandal, if you like, that broke just before the Olympics and has subsequently really been overshadowed by that and, you know, the other nonsense that's going on in the great circus that is the media. Well, that was huge, because effectively the LIBOR scandal alone, which is the London Interbank offered rate, this is for interest rates, and they were being fixed. They've openly acknowledged they were being fixed. There's criminal activity taking place in 2008. But you can rest assured that if it was in 2008, it's been going on prior to that and probably subsequent to that.
Which, in effect itself, would be
enough to undermine and bring into question any bank's claim that you owe them X amount of money on a mortgage, because they were fixing the rates at the time.
Yeah.
You follow?
Yeah, I do. Yeah.
So, you know, that's a big scandal, but that's kind of been a little bit, people have been distracted. You know, it's the old bread and circuses routine that's going on around us. But I would say that the mortgage issue is potentially even as big, if not bigger, than the LIBOR thing.
Yeah, indeed.
Because in this country alone, it affects something like 11.2 million mortgages in this country. And from our research, there doesn't appear to be one, or it seems very, very likely that there is not a single mortgage in this country that is in fact lawful, that follows the law of mortgages. Now, there are many, everyone knows the essentials of contractual law, you know, on the basis that, you know, there are two parts to a contract, and if that contract is in writing, it has to be signed by both parties, which brings us back to the issue of the bankers never signing anything. In essence, what we've got is a criminal system, and but this is it's so transparent, it's almost laughable, because there is statutory law that backs up our claims, and that statutory law is largely Section 2 of the 1989 Law of Property Act, Miscellaneous Provisions Act, which states that for any sale or interest of a disposition in land, it has to be in writing and it has to contain the signatures of all the parties to that contract. Now, whilst the banks are claiming, you see, we have the laughable position where the banks claim that there doesn't need to be one, even though it's written into law. And if you look at the statement from the Lord Mackay, I think it was in the House of Lords, prior to the Act coming out in 1989, made it quite clear that the Act was there to tighten up the procedures and obviously to help sort of smooth out wrinkles in disputes that may arise from what is, possibly the most important contract anyone will enter into. Well, possibly. I mean, at least in a commercial sense.
It looks like those provisions were deliberately set up in an attempt to try and get people to sign things who weren't signing them before.
Well, remember, it's now the 23rd year since that Act came out, and the courts are refusing, even though we brought it to the attention of the courts, and of course the attention of those solicitors who were representing the banks, for whom, at whom charges of negligence would be well justified. Professional negligence would be well justified because, even though we point out the fact that the law, all this can be viewed through the panic, don't they? There's a section there on the law of mortgages.
Yeah. It basically says, doesn't
all it? All the authorities back it up. Yeah. So what's happened is that we've taken it into the, as I say, it's been into the courts, we've been in as defendants, we've been in as claimants, we've been in as appellants. We've covered all angles, all bases, and this has been happening around the country.
But what sort of response are you getting from the courts, I'd just like to know, because it seems to be pretty much a bang-to-rights case, and isn't it surprising that so much effort has to go in to try and prove something that's so, obvious?
Well, what you see is in the county courts particularly, the judges doing all the legwork. You'll have the representative of the bank, who's often some local solicitor. If someone is going in and arguing over the contractual obligations of the bank, as has been the case recently, then what we've seen is district judges and circuit judges really having to put up a wall of, well, it's a wall of illogic, it's a wall of obfuscation, and it's a wall of fear that they might well be the ones to bring down the whole system. There are levels of fear operating, throughout the court system. And some of those guys who were the most fearful are, in fact, the judges, because, there's strong evidence to suggest that their pensions are actually linked to mortgage-backed securities. So they have a vested interest. And besides, ultimately, what is a mortgage? Who are the mortgagees? Who are the banks operating on behalf of? Where do these, you follow the money, where does it ultimately go? Into which purse? Is it not that of the Crown? Because if you, who owns the Bank of England? Is it not the Rothschilds? Are the Rothschilds not an aliment of the Crown, as it were? Mm-hmm. So, you've got a court system that is Her Majesty's court system that is constantly finding against the mortgagor, granting unlawful possession orders, because what ultimately needs to be remembered here is that because there is no lawful contract and because the bank has not followed its statutory obligations, then everything is void. Any agreement, any purported agreement between the mortgagor and the bankster is null and void. It's a nullity, which means that the banks do not have a cause of action for taking the mortgagor to court for default on a mortgage. Now, and this was supported as recently in the High Court as recently as the 11th of July this year, in which one of the judges there, Reimer, declared that the effects of non-compliance with Section 2 of the Law of Property Act, its effect is merciless, is what he said. Neither party and take the other into court. They have no legal basis for their action. You see what I mean, Nick? So this is absolutely huge when people step back and look at it.
And of course, it's not just the question of legal action, is it? Presumably people are being evicted from their homes as a result of this as well.
Yes, they are. But what's increasingly happening is that they're going back in afterwards.
Is there some success being had with that as an approach?
Well, there are successes, but they have to be qualified, I suppose. No one engages in this if they're faint-hearted. Because, you see the full power of the state. The full power of the state comes down. Or, it certainly did in my case.
Yeah, yeah. And we're looking again at a situation
it's getting to the point where the courts are clearly, for whatever reason, denying the people their remedy, their lawful remedy.
So what is the remedy? Presumably we're working on some, given that we can't get remedy from the state, have you got any idea as to where it might go next?
You just broke up a bit there, Nick. Could you repeat the question, please?
Yeah, given that the state is offering no remedy, have you got any idea where you might go next?
Yeah, for this reason, we've taken it into the... complaints have been made on behalf of mortgagors with the FOS, and they're arguing that they're unable to accept mass complaints and that everyone should submit an individual complaint. Now, this is in spite of the fact that the issues, as you appreciate, are actually identical. So where's the logic in that?
I suppose they'd make a lot more money from independent claims than they would from a mass one, but aren't they obliged to take some kind of collective complaint?
Well, you would think so, wouldn't you? But it would seem that we're working here with people who have a flagrant disregard for the law, as it were, or remain blind to the actual logic of our argument. Because basically, what we've got in court is judges coming up with all kinds of obfuscation, the usual sophistry, blinding the litigant in person with with bullshit, for want of a better expression, legal nonsense, babble. It's all a kind of psychobabble that goes on in there, and I hope that it becomes impenetrable for the litigant in person to see through it. And it's basically as saying to someone, I've heard judges say it doesn't need to be a contract, as if a mortgage just arises out of thin air, because contract means the same as agreement. These things do not just arise out of thin air. That's a logical and legal fallacy.
Yeah, indeed it is. And I mean, all contracts require at least the two signatures, and you're getting no signature at all, so there can't be a contract. It's still no matter how much I find out about this system, it still amazes me that it can be so blatant in what it's doing. What's the point in making legislation which you then completely ignore?
Well, it's this idea that the banks are too big to fall, isn't it? I think it goes back to that, Nick. I think that's a meme, if you like, that's been implanted among certain swathes of the intelligentsia. Whether or not they've got Freemasonic connections or whatever their public school by interconnection and interconnectivity might be, it's just ultimately unsustainable, because it flies in the face of logic.
So like I say, given that you've been denied any kind of remedy so far, what's the next thing to do, really?
Oh, the next stage is to take it into which has begun, international arbitration proceedings. This is for and on behalf of the people against the banks.
So you're effectively taking it forward for all mortgage holders, or just for the ones that you've been in touch with?
Anyone can be attached to it, whether or not they know about it. The trust is being formed, you see. That's the beauty of it.
So what's the benefit of having a trust formed for this particular purpose? It's a special purpose trust, is it?
The benefit is to provide remedy for those who have been subject to the criminal actions of the banks. The ruling of an arbitration. So in an arbitration hearing, basically take it into international arbitration, that gives, using certain rules from the UNC trial arbitration rules 2010, which is out there, you can get a PDF of that. But basically, if the other party, providing you follow due process and you serve the notice of your claim and the details of your statement of claim on the other party, and even if they say, well, no, we believe this matter has been sorted by the courts, there's no need for us to come along. Well, if you still follow due process and that gives you the opportunity to introduce certain rules, you can set the rules, if you like, for the arbitration. And once they've received notice of the arbitration, that's it, it's effectively begun. If it came to it and there was a hearing, then we'd be looking to appoint a suitably wise and experienced arbitrator to preside over it, who will just basically examine the facts and hopefully, well, you know, we'll pick someone basically who's able to apply some reasoning and some intellectual vigour and rigour to the matter. Because that's currently something that is not being applied, provided by the courts. But the courts are providing a pretty crap service. They're denying the people their remedy. And that's putting it politely. And, you know, they're denying the people their remedy. They're actually acting at times out and out criminally.
So are there any independent challenges arising, if you like, to the lack of process here? Is it yielding other opportunities for doing a bit of digging and having a go?
In terms of what?
Well, I mean, the thing is, surely there must be a whole load of individuals here who are acting outside their jurisdiction and not basically fulfilling the trust that the public is supposed to have in them, and I was wondering if there was any grounds for challenging on that.
Or well, any chances that people have can, of course, be taken into independent arbitration. I mean, you've got to serve notice on the other party as such, and it may well be a remedy for many people. You know, how much longer are we going to go, you know, banging on the door of a club that isn't going to let us in? That's ultimately, you know, how it may be viewed.
So this kind of collective arbitration process will hopefully moves you into another jurisdiction and enables you effectively to continue applying pressure?
Yeah, you can set the rules. You can determine where the venue might be. And, of course, it gives us the opportunity to just step away from it. Because remember, there are all kinds of things going on with the courts, you know, esoteric happenings and influences whilst you're there. So taking it into independent arbitration means we're not going to go to a place of business whereby we've got this guy sitting in some priestly attire, sat beneath a symbol of the crown and the oppression of the people, where if the barrister, as he may well be, is a Freemason and the judge is a Freemason and there's all kinds of dodgy handshakes and wing winks going on. I'm not saying that happens, but I'm not saying it doesn't happen, Nick. You know, basically, we're taking it out of their what we see as a ridiculous system that's unfit for purpose, and creating our alternative, which will be an opportunity for the issues to be presented rationally, without any obfuscation, without any sophistry, by any partial judge. Because remember, you know, if you're going into court and you see a judge as recently as last week, a district judge, who had clearly written out his judgment before he actually gave it, as it became apparent as you read it through, that the guy was doing, as I said earlier, was doing all the legwork. He determined how he was going to rebut the claims of this who is this guy that's coming off the street and is defending his right to his his property against the bank. You know, who is he? Well, he's not one of ours. Well, we'll be polite to him. We can speak a bit. But this is what we're deciding, because there's no way we can let this happen. You see what I mean? The system is not able to provide remedy, or it, because it's so... it's just got conflicts of interest oozing out of every orifice.
Yeah, indeed. So given that, what chance do you think you stand? Are you hot on the trail of a suitable adjudicator?
Yeah, we are. Well, actually, the feelers are being put out there. We're looking for someone who, as I say, has those qualities which I went into before. Like someone who's got a bit of experience, a wise old head, shall we say, who's capable of discernment and applying some reasoning. Now, he may well have to be something of a maverick, but... And for that reason, perhaps it's best to go for someone who's older. Do you know what I mean? Someone who perhaps feels they've got less to lose, or someone who has, reached that point where they see the corruption around them. And sometimes they observe it, they're able to observe it in those who perhaps they used to work alongside at one time. They see that and they think, you know, I've had enough of this. And I'd love to stick it to the bankers.
Yeah.
So, that's the kind of guy that I'm sure will appear when the time is right. Because I think we're creating so much energy with this now. It's going to blossom. And what people need to realise is, as we take it into independent arbitration, that the ruling of the arbitrator carries, the equivalent of authority as the ruling of the court. And I use the word authority in inverted commas.
Yeah, because, strictly speaking, adjudication or arbitration is supposed to be an option we have as well as court, but you don't see it used very often, do you?
I don't think... I think people are going to wake up to this. And I know a lot of guys have been using it to rebook claims from the tax off from Her Majesty's Inland Revenue Collection Services and other agencies, basically sending them a notice of international arbitration, saying, right, we don't trust the court system, and in the interest of keeping costs down, we're taking this matter into international arbitration, because the court's clearly part of the Crown.
Yeah.
The Crown agency taking you into another Crown agency, or rather taking your legal person into that. I wanted to bring up this in the legal person issue. It's still doing the rounds. And I think people need to look into the whole issue of the surname, because the surname was only invented in medieval times. And what is it? Is it not just the name of a slave? Many people whose ancestors were enslaved in the Caribbean took on the names of the master. So that's why, you may have people of Caribbean origin with names like Mackenzie or McTavish or, Mac this, Mac that, because there were a lot of Scottish guys running the plantations in the Caribbean. So I'm thinking, I'm at the point now where I completely agree with anyone who suggests it's just best to, because ultimately it's their name. They've given it to you. You might say it's a family name, but if you trace it back,
yeah,
so it goes back to the medieval times. It's just a way of keeping tabs on the population.
Yes, it would have been a lot harder when we were all just called Peter and John, wouldn't it? And the name of our trade, maybe, as a kind of as a label.
It'd be a lot simpler. That's why I'm kind of I'm happy to keep the name Michael, but the family name's going.
Yeah.
I understand which to go for. Because I'm known by a few. What's the phrase? Come on, what's the phrase here? Nom de plumes.
Yes.
Michael of the Albiones, which simply refers to the Albiones being the people of Albion, which is these lands, these islands, if you like. I think there are parts of the Basque region where the people refer to as the Albiones, or certainly Spain. And there's also Michael of Elmet is another name that I've used. But it seems to me that Elmet isn't perhaps as ancient as I would like it to be. That only goes back maybe 1,000 years. And currently I'm thinking of going for Michael of Brigantia. Brigantia being an ancient British region, or people who inhabited the region, which is probably now referred to as Northern England, really, from the River Don up, or possibly, yeah, the River Don up to the borders with Scotland, or certainly near Newcastle.
And have you found that it's practical and useful to have an alternative second name, shall we say, something that's alternative to the surname? Is it of practical use to you yet?
Well, it's only useful in the sense that it gives people it's just an identifier, isn't it? That's all. I don't know if I found it practical or useful yet. But I certainly use it. I have a seal now, which I use on the documents, which makes it clear that, you know, I am Michael of of Elmet.
Yeah, yeah. That's what
I've done recently with the court.
I was thinking about the
I'm Scottish, I'm trying to close in the name of my straw man. But increasingly, you know, those issues are kind of increasingly irrelevant.
In what sense?
In the sense that as time goes by, it's less and less a name that I feel any connection to. It's just a token of their system, and they're welcome to play around with it if they want. But
it's nothing to do with me.
It's nothing to do with me. Yeah, exactly.
I was thinking, have you been looking at all at what's been happening in the States with regard to mortgages? Because I gather that, I mean, as well as this business of there not being the signature of the banker on it. There's also this thing, I was looking today at what a depository was and found that I think the second thing they say they do is they call it dematerialization, which, as far as I can understand, is the disappearance effectively of any paper document with signatures on it and its replacement by an electronic recording or registration of some sort. And as far as I can gather, in the States there's been a fair amount of success where this is being tried at actually getting people back into their houses again, even if the houses were previously repossessed. Are you aware of any of this activity?
What is it, the claim that it dematerialized?
Been the basis, as far as I can gather, of the action in America, is rather than, because they probably don't have the 1989 Section 2 miscellaneous provisions. So what they're going for over there is the fact that the contracts should exist because they're supposed to be, you know, in bonded warehouses and the like.
Well, first of all, they have the UCC, which is essentially the US the code that the legislation is supposed to be operating through. Are you with me?
Yeah, yeah.
So they'll certainly have their equivalent of the Law of Property Act 1989.
So they.
But it'll be codified.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, you know, as always, it's a little bit more difficult over here because, you know, this has been said before, but nevertheless, I'll repeat it because we are here. You crack it over here, a whole lot will fall down because this is the heart of it. Or so it would appear. The heart of all the financial chicanery, the wizardry.
Yeah.
Fraud and deception.
Mm. So are we seeing any kind of similar action in the States?
Not to my knowledge. I don't know. I haven't heard that. There were some guys attacking it through the securitization of the note, as they call it over there. But I've not been following what's been going on in the States recently.
Mm-hmm. So when... When do you expect to see? When do you expect to find? You've called the opposition. Have you into arbitration?
Yes, the other parties have been served notice of arbitration.
And when do you expect to be able to make further moves on that?
Well, I think weeks, months.
Yeah, and is there we can read about that on freetheplanet.net. Is there anybody can get in touch with if they're interested in joining this action?
In joining the representative actions, if they could go to www.thinkfree.org.uk, join and put in a little bit where it says reason for joining, just explain who they are, how they found out about it, and why they will be interested in joining the Bankster Busters, which is the collective name for the group.
Right, so you're using thinkfree.org to coordinate your efforts, are you?
A private forum on there, which contains documents and another stuff that people can use in the battle against the banks. And then also, there's lots of information there, knowledge that people are useless people. But we've kept it private for obvious reasons.
It's actually possibly saying a little bit about it in itself, because we'll be talking about the UCT in a little while. I'll play a couple of tunes first, but that is another rapidly developing force, if you like, or kind of group of people. And of course, when things are moving quickly, Skype rooms and the means of communication that we've all become used to using are actually extremely difficult to find things in. And Think Free is a place where subjects of importance can be removed from what is a fairly public eye and discussed, as you say, privately. But also it means that the stuff is kind of there for archive purposes. It means that things that are discussed can be looked at by people that come along a bit later, which is always really important because everybody's on a journey. Are there any other, because
the Skype group is a little bit like a fast-flowing stream, and it babbles along, whereas the forum is a quieter stretch of water where there's time for more contemplation and just to go a little bit deeper into things and to keep keep an eye on what's unfolding, which, as you say, is sometimes difficult on the Skype group.
Yeah, thoroughly useful, I think, and well worth people considering, because one of the things I think we suffer from a lot is the fact that somebody might try something and it may or may not work, and then it just kind of get lost in the mist of YouTube and is never then accessible to anybody else. One of the things I've always thought it would be really useful to have is some sort of place where successes and failures can be discussed and are kind of recorded for posterity. It's a very ephemeral medium, all of this technosphere.
Yeah, it is, and due to the fast-moving nature of it, it can be a little bit tricky for people to keep up with it. You know, I mean, I'm hoping that I've outlined in the first half hour just really what is the scam and what the Bankster Busters is and where it's going in terms of how we're escalating it, having, you know, being denied remedy by every turn by Her Majesty's Court Service. And as I say, that includes the county court level, the administrative courts, the appeal court, even the Supreme Court, with people going in as, you know, not just as defendants, but also as claimants and as appellants too.
Yeah.
So, it's, you'd have to say, well, why bother with it? Why continue with a system that is clearly never going to, or seemingly never going to grant you the remedy that you've been asking to provide.
Yeah. So the basic message is that the mortgages are definitely void. That a lot of the battling through the courts has already been done, and that by adding names to it at this point, people. By joining late, as it were, there's no disadvantage, but you could well be adding your shoulder to what is inevitably going to have to be recognised eventually. As you say, it's unsustainable, the situation as it is.
Yeah, it defies logic, and you know, the longer it goes on, the harder it is for them to wriggle out of it. You know, the suggestion that the morgue is just a rose.
Yeah.
Is about, yeah.
Just a rose.
That sophistry that.
Yeah.
He's blown away.
Well, very good, Michael. I'll put on a couple of tunes if you want to stay on the line, and we'll come back in a bit and talk about the Universal Community Trust, hopefully, for a while.
Yeah, cool, mate. Cool.
Can you remind me again of what the Think Free full URL is? Because I've seemed to have forgotten it.
Yeah, three W's.
Yeah.
Think Free, all one word.
Yeah.
.org.uk.
Thinkfree.org.uk.
Thinkfree.org.uk.
.org.uk. Okay. Very good. Thank you very much. I'll stick that in the chat boxes, put some music on, and I'll be back with you in a couple of minutes.
Okay. Cheers.
Okay. See you in a minute. sneak preview there of what's coming next. You weren't supposed to get that one. You're listening to Dr. Rock on tnsradio.com and Scottish Sovereigns on the land.ning.com. And I've been talking with Michael of the Albioners about a completely ludicrous and outrageous situation which pertains with mortgages across the land and what's being done about it. And really thinking about it, it's no more ludicrous than any of the other stuff that's going on. But one of the serious challenges that I faced a while ago was when representatives of the state turned up in my garden and seemed to think that they had title to some of the stuff that was lying around there, and so they just made off with it, realizing that there was some kind of potential dispute there. It was necessary for me to start looking for some kind of solution to that. And as it happened, a while beforehand, I'd made contact with both the Michael we're talking to and another Michael, Michael of Benicia. And Michael of Benicia told me about his idea for a universal community trust, which since then I've been following closely and indeed working with, as has Michael. And I thought that we could talk a little bit about that, Michael, if you're still there.
I'm still here, Nick.
Very good. I can still hear you. Hopefully they can as well. So I looked to the Universal Community Trust primarily to defend stuff which I might be deemed to have title, to which I might be deemed to have title from those who I didn't think did. Could you explain broadly how the structure of the organisation is designed to work?
Well, first of all, I wouldn't describe it as an organisation.
No, I didn't think you would. Off you go.
It's a loose yet strong connection of sovereign communities, all of which are operating under natural law, and the idea being that the UCT, Universal Community Trust, is what exists between all of us, and that in itself under natural law is immediately a superior jurisdiction to what is currently being applied by the system.
And it has superiority simply because it came first, doesn't it?
My right hand, where yours begin, is the essence behind it. You see, I look at the Franco Collins UK DSI, and I look at the, I've read reams and reams of volumes of writers like Blackstone and Bouvier on the law, and I've ploughed through probably hundreds of statutes, and I've attended various hearings in a variety of bogus venues around the country, and I realised that, you know, in its essence, what there's all these statutes that are produced, and it's thousands every year now. It continues unabated under the Condem government.
Yeah.
And it's just nonsense, because ultimately, you know, it should be, what do we need to understand? What do we all understand? What do we know in our house to be true? In our house, we know that we do not go around causing loss or harm to others. You do unto others as you would have done unto yourself, or my rights end where yours begin. You know, I'm at liberty to go into any bar and start flinging my fists around. However, my liberty to fling my fists around ends where someone else's nose begins, if you catch me drift.
I do.
So I like it, because I just like the simplicity of it. And having done all this delving into the into legalese and all the stuff that comes with it, I just decided that really it should be a lot simpler, and it should be understandable to anyone, whatever age they might be. And even a toddler is able to understand that you don't want to be hitting another child, because you don't want to be causing harm to another. Just as an old, you know, someone in later in life understands that. Everyone's able to understand it because it's the truth. And therefore, I think it's really a natural, almost mycelium-like. I don't wish to go all Terence McKenna on you, but at this point, I'll introduce the idea of mycelium, which, of course, is the is the vines of connectivity that are just below the surface of the ground that spread the mushroom around. The Great Liberty Cap, which of course will be out probably by the end of this month, beginning of next month, maybe into November.
Hurrah.
And so what's happened is that the UCT, and it's all, you can read about it, people can read about it at universalcommunitytrust.net, and there's a link from Free the Planet to there. And there's a video in which Michael Benicia explains the central tenets of UCT. So what it's done is provide people with a means of just stepping out without having to really engage in the erroneous and often tedious letter writing process and, you know, the whole legal machinations that really is a game that you. The game is rigged. You're never going to win at that. So I ask people to step out of that and claim their sovereignty. It's almost taking things to another level, because it really is for those who have had enough of the system, who want to leave their legal person behind and just step out of a system that has been proven time and again to be, you know, operating on behalf of.
As far as I gather, the reason why individuals who are associating themselves with this group of people don't have to go individually through this struggle is because the UCT, in its foundation, has already demonstrated that there's a similar lack of remedy everywhere to the lack of remedy we were talking about with reference to mortgages. So having proved that kind of knowledge, that experience, can be fed down through the trust structure. Is that right?
Yeah. There's three umbrellas, if you like, three layers to the UCT. With the first one being the UCT, Universal Community Trust under natural law. Second layer being the Sovereign Community Trust. So here in the East Midlands, I set up. We've declared the Coriel Tovey Community Trust, based in the geographical area that some may know as Nottingham. Now, so you've got the three, and then the third layer, of course, is the private or the family trust, into which the property of the family, as it were, is held, is placed for the benefit of the beneficiaries, who are, you know, the offspring. In that sense, there's an old saying, isn't there? Own nothing and control everything. I think it's maybe an old Rothschild saying.
Yeah.
Now, there are some working under the misapprehension that this means that anyone who is a beneficiary to the UCC is in effect signing over their property to the UCT. Well, no, that's not the case, because you've created your own private family trust. The beneficiaries are those named as such in your private trust. Nothing is being handed over to the UCT, but what is being facilitated will be in the process of developing it, is, as you know, a system whereby communities and families can benefit from a credit facility, a local credit facility. But again, people can read about this on the UCT website.
Yeah,
it's getting very interesting though, because what's happened is, I say, if you imagine like the mycelium image, we've got these crops of these clusters of community groups spread, you know, popping up around these isles, and we've yet to reach Scotland. And you know what we're effectively looking at is a re-establishing of the clans. He's doing the opposite to what the so-called power and control system wishes. In other words, if they're asking for, you know, I'd never listen, they're going to get it, not for 1 minute, but, you know, they're moving towards greater control, greater centralization of power, more control over people's individual lives, down to the point where, you know, the system, the state dictates how many children some families may have. So the opposite, I think, is what is required, in the sense that, you know, no, less central control, more local control.
And that local...
And within that, you know, you've got some people acting responsibly in their own sovereign capacity, taking full responsibility for their actions and offering their sweat equity for the good of everyone. So, you know, as you were mentioning earlier, we've got the establishment of localization network of communities and trading, a trading cooperative, which is great, isn't it? Because you've been watching it grow.
I think it's really brilliant, and it seems to be growing with ever increasing rapidity. And also, I think one of the things the trading network is establishing itself now as a sort of independent Yahoo group. So there's now the ability to communicate with each other and so start meeting needs with skills, as it were. But I think that the real seed of the trade network is being seen in the development of all of the different trusts themselves, because of course, as people set themselves up in their own private family trust, which, as you say, effectively puts the any family assets that there might be into trust for future generations, and effectively means that the people who've set the family that set up the trust doesn't actually own anything to have it taken off it. And then these separate family trusts are kind of pulling together into community trusts, because, as you know, we've formed one here. We're covering the geographical area of Gwynedd, the old land of Gwynedd. I think the boundaries have changed a bit, but it's been a recognised geographical area for a long time.
Well, that was one of the reasons about taking it back. A lot of the communities that have sprung up have taken on the old established name of, at the time, you know, maybe as long ago as 2,500 years ago, to a time that predates the attempts of invasion and conquest of the Romans and the Anglo-Saxons and, of course, the Normans and all the other would-be conquerors. It's a time, you know, when someone says that they're living in the UK, well, what is the UK? Is it not just a boundary on a map? I saw this guy on, I don't watch it too often, but there's a program called The Coast, or called Coast, and this guy met this mathematician. I think he was quantum mathematics. He was talking about, basically he proved that he was asking what was the total measurement of the UK coastline? And the guy was saying, well, it depends how you do it. It depends on what kind of measuring stick you're using and all of this. But basically, he proved that the whole thing is like a fractal. It's infinite. Because you can never really measure it. You can never really determine it. So when someone says that you're living, that's the first, people claim that you're living in the UK. Well, am I? Who says so? Because it doesn't look like it. What is the UK? Remember, the map is never the terrain. The map is never the land. Just as the menu is never the meal. So, you know, it's part of that saying, well, we don't act, your system is a lot of horseshit, man, it's got built-in controls that mean it looks for the benefit of the tiny elite. Well, you know, we're not interested in that. Why would we be interested in that? We'll offer something of more value. And, you know, that's the simplicity of the UCT. My rights end where yours begin. Everyone's free to do what they want to do as long as they're not causing harm or loss to anyone else and as long as they're honourable in their contracts.
And within that, there is also all of the positive statements in the treaty about nurturing the earth and making sure that we leave it in a more fruitful state rather than a more damaged state as we move on. And it's full of ideals and aims that must be in the minds of many people, I would have thought.
Yeah, because that treaty, which was ratified on the 21st of June on the summer solstice this year, is up on the site, isn't it?
Yes, it is.
Yeah, for people to look at. And again, I kind of like the silent growth of this. It's been going on in the background, barely perceptibly, maybe a little bit below the radar. And it's just beginning to find its feet and it's beginning to blossom all around the country. And as I say, this is before we even, I think the Cymru, or as some would call it, Wales, which I think Cymru is a better term for it, because it decided that it's called Wales, because Wales, I might say, means foreigners.
That's it.
And therefore, you know, it's very natural for those communities which still exist in, and it's more difficult perhaps to establish them in the cities, but certainly in the rural parts, or, you know, people have those natural connections which just arrive. We just have them. It kind of, it unfolds very, very naturally, because it's within us, that understanding of what UCT is, what trust is, and of how simple it is just to abide under natural law. You know, which is why, as I said previously, I'm a little bit wary of those who devise elaborate, really elaborate systems to reply, or they become in fact a mirror of that which they're purporting to be in disagreement with.
Yeah, it's always been my belief that any solutions we do come up with, A, have to be simple, and B, will be simple. And one of the things I'm particularly enjoying about the development of the UCT is seeing people step up to the plate, you know, seeing as needs arise, as the thing gets kind of bigger and more communicative and more of its aims look like they're going to be fulfilled. I'm seeing more and more people with amazing skills and the like stepping into the places they need to be, so that as we need more resource, it is kind of supplying itself from our own ranks, isn't it?
That's right, yeah, people are stepping up, because they've got the skills to offer, you know, in every area, whether it's gardening, permaculture, computer skills, counselling skills, you know, music, poetry, whatever they wish to offer, you know.
And of course that offers the opportunity of physical community as well, of moving yourself around the place and meeting people who you might have met on the internet, but not only meeting them, but doing a bit of work with them and sharing food with them and the like, which I find, again, I do a lot of it and I really enjoy it. And it's something
that comes naturally to us, Nick. I think that's, Ben, that's why. Yeah, I think we enjoy it because it's just a remembrance of how things maybe were.
Which, of course, is what the trust is. That's what the trust is an expression of, isn't it? It's something that already exists, and all this is an attempt to embody it in a way that can then be lived.
It's there for people to use, you know, the idea. There's another idea going around that Michael Benisi is somehow some kind of monarch within it all. But, you know, that's not the case. The case is that really the UCT has been great for people to use, you know, as they require it to be creative with it, operating within the natural law jurisdiction, but to use it as they see fit, as they wish, and to be as, you know, just to allow their creativity to unfold, and without having to do some shitty job, you know, working 40 hours a week in an organisation that you don't really wish to be in.
No, it is another interesting point. I've been doing more and more what I would have used to have called work, for basically just for other people or for the crack, or because there isn't any funding for it, because I know it needs to be done. And actually there genuinely is a whole different quality to work that's being undertaken for the love of it, or for the love of people, rather than for gaming tokens. It's a completely different experience, and not one that many of us get a chance.
Yes, I agree. It's all for the for the love of it. I like that expression. Why are you doing it? I'm just doing it for the love of it, man.
I think that's the true basis of the word amateur, isn't it? Someone who does it for the love of it.
Yeah, it's time to fall back in love with life, just in case you fell out of love with it. Yeah. There's some wonderful things happening right now, just as the, As all the nonsense continues to unfold in the world, and there is an awful lot of it, and a lot of it is pretty dark, we need to just zoom out a bit and look at the opportunities and the moments that are arising ever so easily now, moments of connection. And, you know, that has been one of the joys of the last few years, really, the connections that have been popping up between people.
Yeah, loads of them. Yes, I'm fascinated by watching that. The synchronicities that put two people in the same place at just the right time are really fascinating and encouraging.
So one of the things is that I don't think anyone really is going to be promoting the UC. It's not there to be promoted. It's there for people to just go and look at for themselves. You know what I mean? I'm not here to promote it this evening. I'm just here to, I'm quite happy to answer any questions about it, but it's not about us going out there and saying, look, this is it, this is what we've got. It's for people to take on for themselves. And in that sense, I just think it's really going to take off when it's introduced to Scotland, if it's not been introduced there already. Because the clan system, I think, is probably still, it's still very active, just beneath the surface up there. And, you know, the UCT is effectively just a way to re-establish that, to re-establish these local communities.
And it is as much about what people can bring to it as what it can bring to the people, isn't it?
Absolutely. Yeah. It's about where they wish to take it. As creatively, there'll be all kinds of stuff going on. Yeah, at the same time, we do have those treaties. We've all entered into a treaty with each other. So you've got the, you see what I mean? It's all happening on a kind of fractal, as a fractal, you know, on the local level. Whether it, you know, you've got it begins with the family, then it zooms out a little bit to the locality, and then it zooms out a bit further to the landmass, and then zooming out a bit further, you can see the connections that are extending now to brothers and sisters around the globe.
Yeah.
You know, we'll be entering into treaties with them, with the indigenous peoples the world over. See, one of the things about the UCT is that we are, we are the indigenous peoples of these lands. And indigenous peoples have certain rights. Forget the human rights.
Yeah.
Let's look at the rights of indigenous peoples. The right of indigenous peoples to land. To utilize their own systems their own systems for resolving disputes, their own systems for preserving the land, or regenerating the landscape, or regenerating community.
And it really is a way, isn't it, of making energetic progress in a new direction, rather than having to spend all of our time resisting or fighting against something with which we don't really want to have a lot to do anymore, for reasons that we've already explored.
Yeah, get creative. You know, people have done, I count myself amongst them, have done a lot of research and explored some of those darker recesses of, the labyrinthine tunnel system that seems to be operating.
Yeah.
And, do you want to stay in there for that long, or is there some other more interesting places to go? How creative do you want to be? How much fear do you need to drop? You see, I was walking through, where you are, we've had a lovely, albeit somewhat chemtrail day here in the East Midlands. And I was hurrying back actually to speak with you. And I thought, well, why am I hurrying? And then I thought, just relax, just take it easy. And it's just, I'm just reminding myself to let go. Just to let go of stuff. So letting go of the name is part of that. Letting go of any of the programming that people are mistakenly operating under. Just letting go of it, of all the tensions and all the stresses.
And one of the ways of doing that is to engage positively in something new and creative.
Yeah, absolutely, Nick, yeah.
Well, we're at the heart of the UCT here. There's a lot of work going on the family trust side and on the community trust. We're very, very excited about how it'll develop. So I'm pretty sure there'll be lots more information on the Dr. Rock Show as time goes by, and perhaps you'll come back and join in with us again at some point, because I know there's going to be changes pretty much week by week now.
I'd be happy to do so.
Brilliant. In the meantime, thanks very much for coming on and talking to us this evening. It's really great to hear you on TNS again.
Well, thank you, Doctor. It's been my pleasure.
Brilliant. Well, I'm sure we'll meet together in Meet Space fairly soon, one way or the other. We seem to run into each other fairly often, and it'd be good to lift a glass with you and have some food and stuff.
For sure, Ben, yeah.
Brilliant. I think I can see Dom's lined himself up in the Skype though, so after a couple of tunes we'll be switching from the kind of communal community approach to the distinctly individual.
Well, it's interesting you should bring that up, because Dom is we've set up, there are special purpose trusts that are being set up for those who are living a life on the road, shall we say, for whatever reason.
Oh, is he really?
No, there's a Troubadours Sovereign Trust, Community Trust, and I think there's one for, Dom may be able to tell you, in fact. Get him on now. Go straight into it. Get him on.
Get him on. It's okay. I need to make a quick break anyway. I do.
Okay, but as I say, you know, that it doesn't, you know, there are community trusts popping up for those who are living a more nomadic lifestyle, shall we say.
Oh, that's really great. I'll try and talk to him about that. I know he's been trying to get in touch with Michael Abenicio. I think he might even be somewhere in that neck of the woods at the moment. I'll find out when he comes on.
Okay, Nick. Sorry, Ben.
No problem, Michael. It's really great to have you on, mate. Thanks a lot. I'll see you soon.
Pleasure. Yeah, cheers, Nick.
Brilliant. Day.